Happy Palm Sunday, happy triumphal entry. Two names for the thing that we celebrate and remember today. What happened in history on this day? Jesus rode into town, into Jerusalem on a donkey. And here's the thing, it's like, it's so fun. I don't know, maybe I just find it funny. But like, that's not really unusual for Jesus to go to Jerusalem. He had done it his entire life. He's supposed to, all Jewish males are supposed to go to Jerusalem 3 times a year, according to the law. And I'm sure he went more than that. And so Jesus had entered Jerusalem countless times over the course of his life. But there's just something different about this entrance than any other entrance into the city of Jerusalem that had ever taken place in the history of the city. And that is why the church celebrates what we call Palm Sunday, or the triumphal entry, for the last 1,700 years. It's funny, the moment the Roman Empire allowed Christianity to not be this like persecuted religion in the Roman Empire, people are flocking to Jerusalem on Palm Sunday as soon as they were legally able to. Because it's that important. And to be honest, this morning, I really wrestled with what to say. My honest thoughts were, this is just such a familiar story. Every year the church talks about Palm Sunday and this entrance into Jerusalem. What else can I say? I don't have some amazing genius thought that nobody's ever thought of in existence. What do you say about Palm Sunday? And so I was trying to think of some thoughts. I was kind of thinking maybe I'd go a certain direction. And I went to talk to Ken. And Ken pointed out something that ties in so closely with our study in the book of James that we've been going through. Because James is pointing out the two different paths that we can take. That James sees that there are two different options that we are often presented with in life. And James, we've looked at them the last few weeks. We saw James talking about the wisdom of the world versus the wisdom of heaven. We saw James talking about having the tongue that praises God or the tongue that curses man. James talked about the faith without deeds, which is really no faith at all, or a faith with deeds, which is faith shown by the things that we do. That James points out all throughout his book, his letter to the church, that there are two options, two paths that we are presented with that we can take. And which one will we take? And Palm Sunday does the same exact thing. That there are two options, two paths, two plans to take, and we see that so clearly in the events that happen on the very first Palm Sunday. Two options between the plans of the people around Jesus and the plans of Jesus. That Jesus is taking one path, if you will, unto Jerusalem, but there are two completely different destinations. The destination that the crowds think he's supposed to go down and the destination that Jesus is actually headed toward. And so, after our conversation, after Ken and I chatted about this, I went back to the Gospels and I was reading through the story of the triumphal entry, and all of these things just started jumping out, things I'd never seen before in the story of the triumphal entry. And so I am actually really excited to share this morning. I got some rejuvenation from Ken just about how amazing this story really is, the familiar story of Jesus riding a donkey into Jerusalem. It should cause us to understand the heart of God more clearly, as well move us to surrender our purposes and desires to our God. If I can use the language of James, do we want to follow the wisdom of the world, or do we want to follow the wisdom of God? That's the question. These are the implications that we're going to look at this morning as we go through the story of the triumphal entry of Palm Sunday. So this story is recorded in all four Gospels. We're going to look at Luke's account this morning. I read all four, and this one, just some things really jumped out at me in Luke's account of the triumphal entry. So grab a Bible. We're going to read the whole story. If you're here in person, love for you to pick one up out of the pews, read along with us. If you're online, we'll throw the words up on the screen as well. But I want to hear the exact story of why the church has made this moment so significant in the life of the church. So Luke chapter 19, sorry, I didn't say that, did I? Luke chapter 19, verses 28 and following. Luke 19, starting in verse 28. Here is the word of the Lord this Palm Sunday. After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethpage and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, Go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, why are you untying it, say, the Lord needs it. Those who were sent ahead went and found it just as he had told them. As they were untying the colt, its owners asked them, why are you untying the colt? They replied, the Lord needs it. Like I said earlier, this is Jesus heading to Jerusalem, one of the three times he's required by law to go. All Jewish males are required to go. This is for the celebration of Passover and the corresponding Feast of Unleavened Bread. And so we're jumping obviously right in the middle or toward the end of his journey, if you will. He's about 2 miles away. We know Bethany is 2 miles away from Jerusalem. But this trip to Jerusalem is unlike any other trip. Because Jesus does something that he has never, ever done on any of his trips to Jerusalem. On the outskirts of the entrance, only a few miles away, he gives instructions that he had never given before. Go find a very specific young donkey and bring it to Jesus. He sends a couple of his disciples to go find this donkey and to bring it. And he gives us some instructions. If someone asks you why you're taking this donkey, just tell them, the Lord needs it. And then Luke tells us exactly that it happens, just like Jesus said. But I read that, don't you just kind of chuckle? I kind of laugh at this scenario. Jesus says, go get the donkey. If someone asks why you're taking the donkey, say the Lord needs it. Let me put this story in a modern context. Imagine if I were to tell you this morning, go get a car that has never been driven. Go to the city of Garden Grove, and when you enter it, go into the Mercedes dealership and find the car with 000 on its odometer. And if they ask why you're driving it off the lot, just say the Lord needs it. How do you think the manager would respond to that? It makes me laugh to imagine, like, the disciples, like, what in the world am I about to go commit theft for Jesus? This scenario is so funny to me. But I think it actually tells us something so incredibly important about the heart of Jesus. Because obviously Jesus is a good God. Jesus does not steal property from others. And most scholars think, and I'm in full agreement with them, that Jesus had prearranged this to happen. We know from the Gospel of John that he had spent a lot of time in that region, and so he was probably in and out talking with people. He had probably prearranged this, hey, in a couple days, some of my disciples are going to come pick up your donkey. Is that okay? And they'll return it afterwards. And so Jesus had prearranged for this scenario to happen. And so it's not this, like, it's funny to read it, but it tells us something so important about the heart of Jesus, that this moment was worth pre-planning for. That this moment, this entrance of Jesus into Jerusalem, there has to be something different and unique about it. So different, so significant that Jesus will go out of his way to prearrange some travel arrangements for this moment. And we know this in life. Whenever someone does something different, goes out of their way, we know there's something significant about it. If you've ever driven with someone, you know that the moment they head in a different direction, the moment they get off on the wrong freeway exit that you weren't expecting them to get off on, you know something about the schedule has changed. Hannah knows this all the time, that if we're driving somewhere and I get off on the wrong exit, there's probably an extra stop that I haven't communicated to her about. Now, she probably will roll her eyes and say, Home Depot again. But who knows? Maybe I just really want to take her out for a treat. Maybe I am so excited. I just want to spend some time and just a little surprise mini date. You know, maybe I just really want to get her a churro. And I know there's this new churro spot, and I've got to have her try the latest and greatest churro that we can find. And right now, she's in the back thinking, am I getting a churro after church today? But can you feel the excitement in the room over just churros this morning? And that's just over something so silly. That's the silliest analogy I could think of. But when Jesus makes a unique and different plan to enter into Jerusalem, the disciples have to just at least be wondering, what's different? What makes this trip different than any other trip that we've ever gone on as we enter into Jerusalem? Something's changed because Jesus has some specific plans. Something is different about this entrance into Jerusalem. And if they know their Hebrew scriptures, maybe, just maybe, they might know what's going to happen next. Verse 35. They brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. As he went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. When he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles they had seen. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." "I tell you," he replied, "if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out." Here it is. This is Luke's account of the actual event that we are celebrating and remembering on Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry of Jesus. And as Luke records, this is so much bigger than just Jesus and his 12 disciples. There is an entire crowd traveling with Jesus, and Luke calls them a crowd of disciples. And we know that when we read all four accounts of the Gospels of this story and the events leading up to it, we see that there is a crowd that has been traveling, probably just all of the Jews, all the pilgrims traveling to Jerusalem. And, you know, you're taking basically the same route there. You're kind of just getting bigger and bigger packs as more and more people jump on. And this crowd has been moving from the north to the south of the country of Israel, and they're traveling along. And Jesus has been doing some absolutely incredible things on this final trip into Jerusalem. We know some of the stories that as they were going along the way, Jesus had done a couple of specific miracles, some incredible miracles. Blind Bartimaeus on this journey had received his sight. Lazarus was raised from the dead on this final travel into Jerusalem. And here's the thing, the crowd was very aware of these two miracles. We know that for a fact. We know that the large crowd actually saw Jesus heal blind Bartimaeus because they were trying to stop him from healing blind Bartimaeus. Lazarus was raised from the dead, and that probably wasn't a super public event, but it clearly made news and headlines across the entire city of Bethany that Jesus had raised a leading figure of the town from the dead. It is so important that even to this day, if you go to Israel, the town's no longer called Bethany. They call it Lazarus now. Like, to this day, the town is called Lazarus because Jesus did something so amazing and so public and so known by everybody that it changed the name of the town. That Jesus is entering into Jerusalem with a crowd seeing him do amazing things. And so when they see him riding the colt in the foal of a donkey, this is something unique and special that not just Jesus and the disciples, but the whole crowd picks up on this fervor that there is something special happening, that they are in the midst of a special, unique moment in history. And so they give Jesus an entrance fit for a king. They spread their cloaks out along the road. That's, you know, the ancient equivalent of laying out the red carpet. They are praising God as they enter town, and they're using this regal language. And it was very common for them to sing as they entered Jerusalem. We know that from other Jewish documents, they often sang Psalm 118 as they were walking toward Jerusalem and they got close. And we see them doing that right here in Luke, but they actually changed Psalm 116. They said, it's not blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord, but blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. That there is this regal language and overtones in the entrance. Luke records some of the things the crowd says. If we look at Matthew, Mark, and John's account, we see other regal, kingly language that the crowd is using. That there is some, there's definitely not a full recognition, but there is some recognition that this rabbi, this incredible rabbi who we've seen do some crazy miracles, probably a few days or weeks earlier, that there is something special. This guy entering Jerusalem. And it is stirring up the fervor and the heart and the promises of the Old Testament that there is another king coming. That there is another king coming. John's Gospel, Luke doesn't record it. John's Gospel tells us that they were waving palm branches, which is why we call it Palm Sunday. And that would be something of the equivalent of waving the national flag. Right? If you can use a modern image, right? If the president is going somewhere, there's flags all in the background. This very like nationalistic picture, right? This is a nation. This is the sign of our nation. And these palm branches that 200 years earlier than Palm Sunday, when Judas the Hammer and the Maccabean Revolt, when they free themselves from the Romans, when they enter into their victory march in Jerusalem, they were doing the same thing, waving palm branches, that there are just these overtones of a king coming to the capital city. The crowd knew that there was something special going on, but so did the religious leaders, because they take the exact opposite reaction. If the crowd is being stirred up, if they're getting excited about the entrance of Jesus, the religious leaders are in the exact opposite reaction, because they tell Jesus to stop. Stop it. They say, teacher, verse 39, teacher, rebuke your disciples. Stop all of this kingly language. Stop chanting the Old Testament language that refers to the coming king. Yes, we're coming to celebrate Passover, and that's all we're celebrating. Stop with all the extra accoutrements of a kingly procession. Don't give off these kingly vibes as you enter in Jerusalem. But Jesus says, no. He rebukes them. That Jesus is saying, this, what is happening on Palm Sunday, is exactly what is supposed to happen. The people of Israel were supposed to recognize that something different was happening this morning. They were supposed to sing the Old Testament prophecies concerning him. There was supposed to be this public recognition of the coming of a king. Because if they didn't do that, it is so proper and right that the crowd is doing this, that if they didn't do it, Jesus says, the rocks would have to cry out. That's how important this moment is. That if it doesn't happen from the people who are supposed to give praise to God, then even the lifeless, inanimate objects who can't cry out would do it. Because that is just how important Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry of Jesus as king to the capital city of Jerusalem is. And so the religious leaders are rebuked. And the crowd is actually doing the right thing. They are praising the God. And they are using this kingly language to describe this moment of Jesus' entrance. And so this morning, Palm Sunday, that this is what we're celebrating. What we just read, what I hopefully just explained clearly, what was happening on that moment. That this is what Palm Sunday is all about. The king showed up. Here comes the king on the road to the capital city. A king is coming to the throne, and the people should, and it is proper and right for them to recognize it. But then here comes the distinction. Because as good and right as the events that happened on that Palm Sunday were, that there are actually two paths right here. That there is a branch, a fork in the road, if you will. That even though what happens on Palm Sunday is good and right, there are two different paths that lead from this moment. Because the path that the crowd is thinking is that this is a Jewish king, and he should take the path that we think Jewish kings should take. And the path that Jesus is actually planning on walking down. And there's this wisdom of the world of what the path of the king should be. And there's the wisdom of heaven of the path of what the true king will actually take. Two different paths, two different plans that look so similar on Palm Sunday, and yet they lead to completely different destinations. So what is that first path? What is the thinking of the crowd? What is the wisdom of the world? They see a king coming, their king coming, their ethnic national king coming, and they know their Old Testament, and they know that there are prophecies of a coming king in the line of David, one who is prophesied, whose throne will last forever. And in their history, they know their history. They were taught their history from a young age. They know just the small glimpses and the small tastes of what a good king looks like. They know the stories of King David. They know the stories of King Solomon, of King Hezekiah, of King Josiah. Four good kings for brief moments in Israel history when they received the blessing and favor of the Lord because of the king was leading them toward God. And I already mentioned it earlier, but it has to ring so deeply in the hearts of the first century Jews that 200 years, almost to the year before Palm Sunday, that Judas the Hammer and the Maccabean Revolution led them to roughly 100 years of freedom. For this brief moment, 200 to 100 years before Palm Sunday, they had this brief moment of freedom as an independent nation, or they ruled themselves and weren't paying tribute to someone else. And they have to be thinking, man, would it be so nice to have another king like this? Don't you remember? Just 105 years ago, we were a free nation. Those Maccabees, they threw off the Greeks, and then the Romans took us over. Maybe it's now time. Maybe it's now in the time of God
to overthrow the Romans as well. The first, when Rome took over, the very first king that they installed, the Roman king that was ruling over their land, was Herod the Great. We're very familiar with him in the Bible. But he had built this massive palace in Jerusalem. And it's where Pontius Pilate would stay when he was in town, because he would be, right, Jesus' time, the king over the region. But there is this palace, this sign of Roman authority, the Roman throne, if you will, sitting in the capital city of Israel. And if the Jewish crowd is welcoming their Jewish king back into their capital city, then that is the only proper place to go. Go take the palace back. This city, this land is ours. Go get the palace. It is ours by the very promises of God. And actually, I was thinking about it. They probably actually don't even want Jesus to take Herod the Great's palace, because that's on the western side of the city. They probably want Jesus to walk in, tear that up, that symbol of oppression, and throw it out and go build the temple on the right, on the eastern side of the city where David's palace was, because that is where the proper king of Israel is supposed to reign. Go reestablish the true palace of David on the eastern side of town, because this is what kings do. When you are in authority, when you have the power and the might, when you make an intentional procession to the capital city, you bring with it as much authority as you can muster. And against the backdrop of a Roman Empire, that this is exactly what kings did. If you know your history of Julius Caesar, the very first emperor of Rome, when he decided to take the throne, when the Roman Senate switches into the Roman Empire, what did Julius Caesar do? He mustered his men and he crossed the Rubicon. He crossed a very small creek up in northern Italy. But it was a moment in history, in world history, which said for the first time, a man is coming to take over the entire Roman Empire. That he crossed a stream, it's recorded, he said, the die is cast, right? I am now headed toward the throne in Rome, and there's no turning back. When you cross the Rubicon with an army, you are telling the world, you are signifying everywhere that the king is coming to take the throne. And after a very long, bloody civil war, he was victorious. Julius Caesar made a procession to Rome, took over the Roman Senate, and became the first Roman emperor. And that this crowd, they know the stories. They know the histories of their history, of Roman history. And they know the type of path that kings take. When you come to claim the throne, that means you wage war against whoever's currently on the throne. That you've got to amass enough troops, enough manpower to get the job done. And just maybe, in the back of their minds, there is this inkling that this guy riding this donkey with cloaks thrown over it, with the national flags waving in the background along the processional, that this just might be the start, the catalyst, the flashpoint of a new moment in history, which the king, the Jewish king, just might be powerful enough to overthrow the oppressive Romans and bring back the peace that we have heard in our history when Israel was on top. That this is the thinking of the crowd. This is that moment on Palm Sunday, that this is the path that they want Jesus to take. And so if that's the first path, what's the second path? What is the actual path? What is the actual route that Jesus is taking? What is the true wisdom of God? And we have to remember, it looks the same. Jesus is riding in on a donkey, an exact fulfillment of Zechariah 9 verse 9. That Jesus pre-planned this moment. He went out of his way to set this moment up. He meant to write into these symbols and phrases that refer to the promise of the coming Davidic king to take the throne of David forever. But just because it looks similar doesn't mean it leads to the same destination. Because Jesus was coming unlike any other king that had ever come in human existence. Most kings ride in on white horses as a symbol of their authority and might. Jesus rode in on a humble donkey, an animal that's not designed for war. Most kings would send their troops to fight the battle for them. Go fight on behalf of me. Not Jesus. He rode that donkey in to fight the great war himself. Most other kings will fight against other humans to wrest power away from them, to stop the oppression of some other people group. But Jesus didn't come to wage war against humans. He was fighting the powers of Satan in hell, the one who truly holds humanity captive and oppressed. that Jesus was fighting the oppression not done by external forces, but by the wicked, sinful heart that enslaves the soul of every human alive. Most kings head for the palace because that's where the throne is. Jesus was headed to the cross, toward the method of execution that only the most cursed receive. Most kings punish their enemies for what they did. Jesus took the punishment for things he never did. Most kings spill as much crimson blood as they can to show the futility of rebellion. Jesus spilled his own blood to show his love to bring freedom from our own rebellion, to bring peace. Not the peace that comes from the stomping boot that snuffs out any resistance, but the true peace that allows for true wholeness and healing that humans are designed for in perfect love, service, and freedom. That Jesus knew the path that is actually the wisdom of God, the path that actually can only do what every other king in existence would long to do, but that to bring the true freedom, to bring the true peace, is not done like every other king, but done on the path that he was walking toward the cross. The destination, the final destination for that true Davidic king. All the Old Testament prophecies looking to this coming Davidic king, this reference that he's going to be riding a young donkey, that all of this, who is the actual king that sits on that donkey? Who is the actual son of David coming to rescue Israel? It's actually Jesus, who's going to do something unlike any other king. And it makes Jesus so sad that as he is entering in the right and proper method and manner in which God wanted him to enter the capital city, that Palm Sunday crowd missed the true purpose of that triumphal entry. Look what Jesus does next. Verse 41. As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, "If you, even you, had only known on the day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." That is this incredible, this is this moment, this Palm Sunday, this triumphal entry of the king to Jerusalem is supposed to be this amazing event. And yet at the end of it, Jesus can do nothing but weep over the people that don't recognize what he really came to do. That he weeps for this Palm Sunday crowd, for the entire city of Jerusalem. That they missed the whole purpose of the point of the king coming to you. I mean, that language at the end, verse 44, because you do not recognize the time of God's coming to you. Jesus is saying, this moment, this day, is the time of God's coming. And you, although you celebrate it in the proper manner, you don't recognize the point of it all. That they miss what the day was all about. That if you like, back in verse 38, the crowd was literally singing, "Peace in heaven and glory in the highest." They were crying out the Old Testament language of the coming peace that would come in the reign of the future son of David. That they were crying out for peace. They were using the right language to describe the peace that they longed for and God had promised, but they didn't understand where the peace really comes from. They didn't understand how to truly find peace because they thought that peace would be found by installing the king in the palace in Jerusalem. But Jesus knew that peace would only become on the cross outside of the city gate. And because they don't understand, they didn't understand the heart of God. They didn't understand that the cross is the only way to find peace. They kept looking for someone else. They kept looking and longing for someone else to bring peace. And Jesus prophesies here. He's looking to the future because Jesus sees the Jews actually do this in AD 66 when they march in Jerusalem and they kick out the Roman king, King Agrippa II. They kick him off the throne. He runs with his tail between his legs back to Rome. And for this moment, Israel has the palace again and a king. But then Rome comes right back in, sieges the city, and does exactly what Jesus prophesies here in AD 70. That the Palm Sunday crowd wanted peace through the wisdom of the world. And all it leads to is the destruction of the capital city. And Jesus' heart breaks. The king himself coming to win the great war by his own death and sacrifice, and the wisdom of God and the path that the Lord has laid out for him to take, that Jesus is walking this road knowing that the crowd not only doesn't get it, but they are going to keep continuing to look for a different king. That Jesus was coming to do the very things they sung about that morning, to come to bring peace in heaven and glory in the highest, and the crowd missed it. And so this morning, why do we tell the story again and again? Why do we remember Palm Sunday? Because the same question is presented to us this morning. Do we recognize the true purpose and mission of the King who has come? Do we long for the true path of peace that Jesus was bringing? Are we willing to follow the King wherever he leads on the path of the wisdom of God? Or are we going to continue to walk down the path of the wisdom of this world? So I want to end this morning with something that Peter preached years later. That Peter is a funny guy, and that he initially thought just like this crowd, even swinging his sword to try and fight the great war for Jesus. And all Peter managed to do was to momentarily tear off a guy's ear. But Peter eventually understood the path of peace. He understood the path of the true King. And he said this. I just want to throw it up here on the screen real quick. In Acts 10, he's preaching in Israel, and he says this: "As for the word that he sent to Israel, preaching," here it is, "the good news of peace through Jesus Christ, that true peace that Jesus brings," which of course he has to say, Jesus is Lord of all, "you yourselves know what happened throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee after the baptism that John proclaimed, how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and with power. He went around doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil, for God was with him. And we are witnesses of all that he did, both in the country of the Jews and in Jerusalem. And they put him to death by hanging him on a tree. But God raised him up on the third day and made him to appear, not to all the people, but to us who have been chosen by God as witnesses, who ate and drank with him after he rose from the dead. And he commanded us, to preach to the people and to testify that he is the one appointed by God to be the judge of the living and the dead. To him, all the prophets bear witness that everyone who believes in him receives forgiveness of sins through his name." That Peter took him a while, like all the disciples, but Peter got it. After the resurrection, after the things that they witnessed, that they saw with their own two eyes, they finally understood the wisdom of God. They finally understood the path of the true King. And so Peter comes and spends the rest of his life, to put in his own words, to preach the good news of peace through Jesus Christ. That this became his mission. That he longs for the same peace that Jesus offers and cried over on that Palm Sunday. The true peace that is found not from the oppression of the world, but from, as he preaches here in Acts 10, but from the oppression of the devil. That Peter was a witness and understood that the oppression that we really need deliverance from is not from some human government, is not some ruling empire, is not what someone else has done to us, but the oppression that comes from the devil and our own evil desires. That if we want to find peace in this world, if we want to find the salvation that God offers, then we need someone to defeat the devil, to defeat sin, and to defeat death. That's the kind of King that we really need. And so this Palm Sunday, which Jesus do you want to follow? Do you want to follow the Jesus that the crowd was looking at? Or do you want to follow the real Jesus? Do you want to follow the Jesus that looks like he's going to walk to the palace? Or do you want to follow Jesus as he's actually going to the cross? Do we want to follow a Jesus that's really just a placeholder for our own desires, our own expectations, our own foolishness? Or do we want to follow the real Jesus who calls us out of following our own wisdom and desires of this world, and who calls us to take up his cross just like he did? Because the answer to the peace and the satisfaction and the true deepest desires and longings of our heart are only going to actually be found if we follow the true King to the cross. And so let this day, let Palm Sunday, let the celebration of the triumphal entry of the King into this capital city remind us of the truth. Not just that the King showed up, but that the king wants us to follow along with him. Not just that he wants us to follow along with him, but the good king actually desires what is best for us and knows the only path to peace and satisfaction. The question presented on Palm Sunday is, will we actually follow after the king? The paths look so similar. This moment in history, the crowd looked like they were doing the right thing. They were doing the thing that Jesus actually wanted them to do. But it is the saddest thing in the world to know that there are people who can look like they're going the right way, but are not following the king at all. Jesus says that there'll be people who claim to call him Lord, and Jesus will say that they actually never knew him. That there are people who claim Christianity, but they're not disciples of Jesus. That people can attend church, they can sit in the pews for years and years and years, but not actually follow the king. They're just like the crowds. Interested in Jesus, interested in the things that Jesus can do, maybe the desire for the miraculous, a desire to be entertained, because Jesus, in the midst of doing amazing healings, like, it is entertaining to see, you know, a blind guy suddenly able to see a dead man walk out of a tomb after 4 days of being dead. But if we're not interested in learning everything Jesus has to say and committing our lives to follow after him and to obey all that he has commanded us and following him no matter where the road goes, then we are not following the path of the king. That the path of godly wisdom is to follow Jesus all the way to the cross. It is this upside down value that you gain everything by losing. That we lose our lives to gain true life, that we surrender control of our lives, and we follow Jesus wherever he leads, we actually paradoxically almost find the most amazing peace and beauty and wonder and purpose and fulfillment and satisfaction that we were meant and designed to have, that only come by living the upside down, the sacrificial life of our king. Because it's a king who doesn't take the throne for himself, but who sacrifices on behalf of his people. That's actually the most beautiful message that the world has ever heard. A king who isn't interested in taking power and control and authority for himself, but actually laying down his own authority to save others. A king who sacrifices for the people. The greatest upside down flip, because no king does that. Julius Caesar didn't lay down his life for his men, but the true best king did. And Palm Sunday shows us exactly what Jesus does. And so this morning as we sing this final song, and I hope that as this week, it's called Holy Week, where I hope that you spend this week thinking about the most amazing week in history because of what our King did for us. That there is a promise, and I hold it out for all of us this morning, that the God of the universe wants you to find true peace. And it's found in following the true King. And when we do, our lives will be transformed by the love and the grace of the only king who ever laid down his life for his people. Let's pray. Jesus, this morning, Lord, maybe this story is so familiar, and I confess that last week and earlier this week, I was thinking too, the same thoughts. This story it's so familiar. But God, I pray that you would give us your eyes to see your truth and your wisdom. Lord, to see the reality that the king is marching, Lord, not to the palace, but to the cross. Lord, not following the ways of every other king seeking authority, Lord, but coming to sacrifice your life to save. And Lord, may that transform our lives. I pray that this would not just be a story. It would not just be some words that we heard on some Sunday morning, but it would actually affect every area of our lives. Lord, would the truth of what you've done and what you said sink so deep that it touches and transforms every area of our lives? Because you are King. And Lord, we confess and cry out that we want to follow you every step of the way, wherever you lead, or knowing that the path of the King is the best path. Amen.